Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Joining us in this hour, Mark Hamrick, as he does every week, senior analyst, bankrate.com. The December jobless numbers have been out for a couple of days. Everyone's had the opportunity to digest them, Mark. Welcome, and what do they reveal?
Good to be with you, my friend. I can't believe we made it into Tuesday, almost the second. Well, it is the second week of January in 2022, and yeah, a little bit of indigestion on that December jobs report, simply because consistent with the pandemic, it sort of dished up a number of surprises, and really, it was the second straight month where that was the case, where we really had, you know, kind of the equivalent of a head-on collision between the two sets of data that are generated between a household survey that gives us the unemployment rate and the establishment or business survey that gives us the number of jobs added. And so the collision was the number of jobs added, at least in the month of December, came in below expectations, even below the previous month. By the time you add in revisions, it ended up being not quite so negative, but you end up with essentially 340,000 jobs being added between the revisions and December that you didn't have before, 199,000 for December alone. And then that unemployment rate gets, you know, ever closer to the pre-pandemic low, which was 3.5%. We're now at 3.9%. So I guess we shouldn't be surprised that narratives could be a little confusing in this day and age. But, you know, we'd love it if more of this data would align more consistently. But, you know, earlier in the week, we had had the ADP report that told us there were 800,000 jobs added on the month. That's a private payroll survey. We've had other indications from the Labor Department on a near record number of job openings, a record number of people leaving their jobs. So I don't think that report last Friday does anything to dissuade us from the notion that the job market is tight, but it's tight within the context of strange things happening with the pandemic and, of course, the Omicron variant.
Mark, we continue to get a lot of texts asking, when we're comparing these numbers, what is the actual baseline? So are we looking back to the number of jobs available previous to the pandemic or just year over year?
Well, I mean, I think we can do all of that. I think one of the things that we want to see, for example, is recovering all the jobs that were lost during the pandemic. And I think we're still 3.6 million away from that. And then the fact of the matter is, as time has marched on, even though in some ways it seems to have stood still, that we probably would have averaged, you know, during normal times, 250,000 jobs a month in any case. And so at that point, you're starting to look at something along the lines of another 5 million jobs. So we're still digging out of a hole. But the question is, do we have anything to dig with? Because if we don't have people in the labor force, if we don't have sufficient legal immigration to accomplish those employment goals, I'm afraid that we're going to continue to be telling this story about how employers are looking around going, where are all the workers? And obviously the pandemic doesn't help us with that. But the fact that wages have risen, not rising enough to keep pace with inflation, but they have risen above a pace that we saw before the pandemic, that is impressive. Many households do have more cash on hand than they had before. But we know that there are, you know, income and wealth variations or, you know, issues that are where they're not everybody's keeping pace with their neighbors, so to speak. That's always going to be the case in our economy. Maybe it's less so now because the economy has been growing, the job market's improving. And just this morning, for example, Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell is on Capitol Hill for his confirmation hearing, obviously renominated or nominated for a second term. And he's talking about the fact that he's been questioned about it is, you know, can can we sort of have a rising tide in the economy that lifts more boats, knowing that there are differences among different groups when it comes to unemployment, persons of color, et cetera, who don't enjoy the same lower unemployment rate that that others do.
So, and I read that in the report that, you know, for minorities that the unemployment rate is higher. That's an outcome. Do we know the why?
I think there are a lot of different reasons. I think one is the fact that differences in education, there are some structural issues that are out there that some would point to being essentially structural racism. I don't think you can say that that issue has been resolved in our society yet, but ultimately it is that we need to better educate and prepare people for the workforce, and a lot of those things have been disrupted during the pandemic. You have trade schools that haven't been functioning. You have in-person learning that basically hasn't certainly occurred as consistently as it was during the pandemic, and that's a hindrance for employers who need well-qualified candidates. And that applies across the board. So, you know, unfortunately, you know, we'll never have that sort of Orwellian situation in our society where everybody is made equal. That just is impossible. And we know the political systems that try to achieve that and fail mightily. But we can still strive for that within a democracy and a republic. And I think those are laudable goals.
Black workers rose to 7.1% unemployment, 3.2% for white workers, and Hispanic employment fell a little bit as well. When we looked at the disproportionate number of jobs as it relates to job growth, has been in hospitality, tourism, and others, more of the low-paying jobs. How does that square up? Obviously, you know, I went to a drive-through Chinese restaurant yesterday, and they were closed. Omicron's hitting them, and they're not able to staff. But they were closed for a month and a half before that because they couldn't hire anybody.
Right, and then so you look at leisure and hospitality that includes bars and restaurants, and the Labor Department tells us that that sector has added 2.6 million jobs since. Essentially, we've begun recovering from the pandemic, or I should say in 2021, but the employment is still down by 1.2 million since February of 2020, when we sort of began to see the real impacts on the economy from the pandemic and the lockdowns. So I think that this is going to continue to be a struggle. And, you know, there was a great story, I'll just use that as an example, in the Washington Post in the past few days, including some commentary from the CEO of Chipotle, who basically is saying, listen, if we can't accomplish this using human capital, we're going to have to turn more often to technology. And I think that probably is going to end up being part of the solution. You know, I don't think many of us necessarily want to sit down at a fine dining establishment or one that's even sort of in the middle category and think about ordering on an iPad. But listen, you got to get the job done one way or the other. And that may end up being part of the solution in some settings. And the other part, of course, is that employers are doing what they can to improve working conditions, to raise wages. But that only works so far, particularly at a time when you have inflation running at about a 7% annual pace, and many consumers are certainly very price conscious about, you know, how much more you're going to raise prices on me.
Mark, many folks are saying that this most recent report kind of pushes the Fed to do something maybe sooner. What is behind that thought process?
Well, the Federal Reserve has been, in a sense, caught flat-footed by the inflation problem, which has been more significant and more persistent. You know, we talked for months about how officials basically continued to preach from the hymnal of this too shall pass, and it hasn't. And, you know, we just completed our quarterly economic survey for those who, you know, want to do some reading. And we published four stories on that at Bankrate.com last week. And obviously one of the important questions there is the persistence of inflation. And for what it's worth, the economists believe that we are either at the point where inflation has peaked or soon will be. I do think that, unfortunately, the pandemic sort of raising its ugly head again here lately is causing supply chain disruptions again. It's not a question of whether there's sufficient demand. The question is whether there's sufficient supply. And the economists believe that the worst of the pricing shock, if you want to put it that way, will be behind us by the time we get to the second half of the year. But that's a long time. And we have plenty of data to suggest that consumers are having to cut back on other things. And it's the number one impact, essentially, at least from an economic perspective, that's dampening consumer sentiment or consumer confidence. So, and you know, I can't escape the fact that I work and live around the Washington, D.C. area, and which with each month that I'm tearing off, another month has passed with the calendar. And, you know, please don't curse me for saying this, but we're getting ever closer to the midterm elections. And one way or the other, the political narrative is going to get noisier.
Been receiving a number of texts as well from folks that are asking, is there a differential of the impact that where we find ourselves now, just specifically relative to this jobs report? Who bears the brunt more, small business, large business?
I think, obviously, small business has less flexibility, less access to capital markets, you know, less access to borrowing, and less flexibility in the resources that they have on hand with respect to personnel. And I will say that in an ADP report that we saw last week, which, you know, breaks it down between small, medium, and large businesses in terms of those that are adding workers, it was pretty well dispersed in that. But, you know, I think that all of us know examples of small businesses that have closed during this time. We just had a heartbreaking development in our neighborhood here in suburban Maryland, where one of our most beloved Italian restaurants basically threw in the towel after 17 years. And you know, they don't have the access to borrowing that the large chains do, or maybe they didn't take advantage of the PPP program that gave many of these companies a lifeline. So, you know, it kind of should go without saying that one of the reasons why we need vibrant small businesses is because we need innovation. We need the future large businesses to be sort of percolating out there in the economy and coming up with the next great concept, whether it is a restaurant or whether it's something that's in technology or something in between. And when those kinds of enterprises are suffering for whatever reasons, whether it's regulation, too much in taxes, which can obviously be a local factor, whether it's a state or locality, or even on the federal level, if they're struggling, then ultimately that's holding behind the innovation and recovery in the U.S. economy.
I've read that there's legitimate concern for folks relative to, especially in the small business world, let's just use restaurants as an example, wage pressures, inflation, food price. Many of those feel like they may be pricing themselves out of the market. They don't have anywhere to turn, that we could be facing a spring of a lot of closures.
Well, I mean, I don't think you can totally discount that, but the one thing that has been consistent for the past, I don't know, 6 to 9 months has been an almost shockingly low number of job cuts, and that's seen in the weekly jobless claims numbers that we see. That has remained near the lowest levels in 50 years. And so, obviously, during the normal course of the way that an economy unfolds, some of those things can happen beneath the surface, and they don't necessarily present themselves in the wholesale or, you know, broad-based economic data. But I think the other part is that many consumers, let's just assume that, you know, I'm going to pray that we're able to put the worst of this pandemic behind us in the next, I don't know, 4 to 6 weeks. I know it's important for tourism around your neck of the woods as well. If indeed that occurs, I think many consumers are going to continue to be eager to take advantage of situations where they can get out of their own house. And, you know, we've been talking about that really since we first started thinking about the implications of the pandemic and working and staying at home what feels like too long. So I think the demand is going to continue to be there. Obviously, it's a struggle on the pricing front, but I would say also that entrepreneurs and businesses in general are very good at adapting. And it may be, as they did around here in Maryland in recent months, that essentially they, you know, move away from serving crabs because crabs had gotten way too expensive coming out of the Chesapeake Bay. And, you know, people went to shrimp, just to use kind of a simple example. And now, sure enough, the price of our beloved blue crabs around Maryland has come back down, and people are sort of wading back in and buying those things again. And I think you'll see that across the board. People are very adept at substituting. And for those who have the deep pockets or are not as concerned, they'll go ahead and pay. And that's probably going to be one of the kind of conflicting aspects of the economy, where growth is relatively strong, the job market's strong, but there are still going to be people who are left behind.
Excuse me. I, like you, fall more on I feel better about where we're going to be in the spring. But there is that strain of angst and anxiety that's running there, where folks are very nervous.
Completely understandable, you know, and, you know, I think the two of us, without casting aspersions on you there, my friend, I think the two of us are old enough to remember the impact of inflation.
It is my birthday today, Mark.
Oh, my gracious. What a coincidence. Well, happy birthday. The good Lord must.
So there is another year. There's another year added to that age.
Well, God bless you and many more to come. And so whatever that number is, you know, I think we have seen enough over the years to remember that the experience of the 1970s with inflation was quite miserable. And this is one reason why Jerome Powell is basically saying, hey, we've got this. If we need to raise interest rates more than is expected, we will do that, because, you know, it's one thing to talk about a recession, but inflation can be every bit as damaging as a recession on the economy, because it ends up being, you know, kind of a sledgehammer of a tax, and that's where we've been over the last year. And that's why I think it is kind of a universal condition for many consumers, is they are quite fed up with inflation, didn't see it coming, probably none of us really did. I didn't see the causes of it coming per se, and hope that we can be done with it sooner rather than later.
Yeah, the only thing that kind of dampens my optimism is the most recent articles that I've read about this supply chain disruption. Some folks are saying it could get worse before it gets better, and a lot of issues that are going on in China right now are going to be, you know, determinative of where this thing goes, and that could be a problem. That's something that we might not be able to get our hands around.
I think you're absolutely right, and I don't think there's any question that there will be certain aspects of it that will persist. They already have longer than expected, and if indeed it's sort of more broad-based, and that's going to be more problems for the economy. I mean, around here in the Mid-Atlantic right now, many grocery shelves are depleted simply because we've had two winter storms in a row, and people are sort of like, where can I get lettuce? And between that and climate change, you have that with the tropical storm season in your neck of the woods as well. It feels like we just can't catch a break. And, you know, for all those reasons, I think consumers are looking for reasons to feel better about things, but between the pandemic and the way the economy has proceeded with inflation, the negative impacts of inflation have really kind of outweighed the positive impacts of improvement in the job market, at least when you look at the consumer sentiment surveys, which is pretty astounding when you think about an unemployment rate that has been close to 4% and now just moved below 4% in the latest reading.
You know, it must say something about us down south. You guys, a storm comes, y'all buy lettuce. We buy toilet paper.
Well,
I'll just leave it at that, Mark.
That's very well said, my friend. Well, happy birthday. What a pleasure to know that and to be able to continue to enjoy this opportunity with you on the air. Thanks so much, Noel.
Thank you so much for joining us. As always, we appreciate your time and your insight.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.